Chapter 2. High Anchor, 42 Hydra Tertius, the next day cycle. Grammaticus was dressed and ready when Sonica arrived. He sat at the metal table, exhibiting a sort of anxious excitement. "I imagine he's ready to speak with me," said Grammaticus.
"He is."
"Finally," said Grammaticus, and got to his feet. "We're at High Anchor?"
"At High Anchor above 42 Hydra Tertius. An interesting choice of location, John."
Grammaticus smiled. "It was selected very particularly as a token of respect for the Alpha Legion's iconography. Do they approve?"
"I think the name just makes them suspicious."
"Then again, everything makes them suspicious." Grammaticus laughed, but Sonica could hear the nervous edge in it.
"John," he said, "I don't really understand what this is about, but if you want things to go your way, if you want your mission to succeed, you have to get yourself together. You've been in here too long. You're wired. Try to calm down. Please don't be hyper or joke around with them."
Grammaticus nodded and cleared his throat. He took a deep breath.
"I understand," he said. "Thanks for the advice. I am a little tense."
They left the cell together. Grammaticus took one last look back as if he fully expected to see himself still in it. Sonica led him down the dull metal hallway of the detention block, past the blank hatches of other cells, and through two cage doors that slid open when he waved his hand in front of the lock plates.
"How is the hand?" Grammaticus asked.
"Better than the old one," Sonica replied. They walked out into one of the battle barge's main spinal corridors. The deck was mesh, and the corridor was so large that a tank might have been comfortably driven along it. The gunmetal walls, banded with horizontal bars of frosty mauve lights, seemed to stretch away forever. Their footsteps echoed on the metal. There was no one else around.
"They trust you," Grammaticus remarked.
"What?"
"To send you to fetch me with no escort."
"This is an Astartes battle barge, John, one of the most fortified and secure warships in human space. Where exactly would you run to?"
"Good point."
"They do trust you, though," said Grammaticus. "Did you ever wonder why they let you do this?"
"Do what?"
"Fraternize with me? Eat lunch with me every day?"
Sonica made a sour face.
"I don't ask. In almost all respects, I've been as much of a prisoner as you."
"You must have thought about it," Grammaticus pressed.
"I suppose," said Sonica, "they believe you'll relate to me better than to any of them. Human to human."
"Or whatever it is I am," Grammaticus chuckled.
Sonica glanced at him.
"Actually, I asked their permission. They're not like me. They don't even eat, or not that I've witnessed. For the first few days, I'd dine alone, and then bring you your food. It seems stupid not to combine the two events."
"And they said yes?"
"They said yes," Sonica agreed.
"Of course, it quickly occurred to me what they were really after. They wanted me to build a rapport with you, the sort of rapport that none of them could fashion personally."
"Didn't they worry that I might somehow influence you?"
Sonica looked Grammaticus in the eyes.
"I think they were actually hoping that might happen."
"What do you mean?" asked Grammaticus.
"You wouldn't dare try anything with an Astartes, but with a lowly operative? I believe they were interested in what they might learn about you if you did try something."
Grammaticus pursed his lips.
"That's remarkably perceptive of you, Pedro.
So, do you think you've fallen under my thrall?"
Sonica shrugged. "How could I tell? I know you're a dangerous man, John, and that you can achieve with words what a Lord Commander couldn't with Titans. My impression has been that we've always talked as friends. I doubt you'd admit otherwise."
Grammaticus nodded.
"Of course I wouldn't," he said. A little further on, Grammatica stopped and looked over his shoulder.
"What's the matter?" asked Sonica.
"I thought," Grammaticus began, "I thought I heard..."
"What?"
"I thought I heard her calling out to me," he said.
"It was your imagination, John," Sonica told him.
In the long walk from the detention block to the briefing chamber, they saw no signs of life except for a pair of polished arachnoid servitors working at a wall panel and a busy cyber drone that zipped past high overhead and vanished into the distance of the vast corridor. The hatch was a huge blast shield with the emblem of the Hydra graven on its oiled surface. Sonica had seen many parts of the barge during his time on board, and all of them had been spare, functional, and utilitarian. This was the only piece of decoration he had come across. As they approached, the hatch opened, lifting a thick, toothed base up out of slots in the deck. It rose like the gate of a portcullis. The chamber beyond was almost pitch black, but they could both sense how large it was. 20 meters in front of them, illuminated by a single amber glow globe, Alfarius sat on a heavy, undecorated steel throne. He was wearing his full armour, and his helm sat on the broad arm of the throne beside his right hand. He stared at them.
"Approach."
"John Grammaticus, Lord," said Sonica.
"Thank you, Beto. Stay, please."
Sonica nodded and stepped to one side.
"John," said Alfarius.
"Great Lord," Grammaticus replied.
"I believe there will be a reckoning," said Alfarius. "Your cooperation is expected."
"And will be given, to the best of my abilities," Grammaticus said.
"We stand at high anchor above the world you selected," the Primarch said. "The expedition fleet is about 9 hours behind us. As soon as it has arrived and recomposed, we will commence surface deployment."
Grammaticus swallowed briefly.
"That suggests a war footing, as does your armor."
Alfarius nodded.
"I don't venture into the unknown unarmed, John. You told me that this cabal of yours asked you to bring me here. You say they wish to talk of weighty matters. I welcome discourse and enjoy the stimulation of meeting new minds and new ideas. But I am no fool. The Imperial Army and my forces will assemble and make ready. At the slightest sign of disingenuity or betrayal, your cabal, if it is really here, will face extreme sanction."
"You must do as you see fit, Lord," said Grammaticus. "In the spirit of cooperation, I would say that the cabal does not find threat postures especially endearing. It would prefer to undertake its dealings with you without the duress of a military presence. However, I believe the cabal will make allowances. They appreciate that you are a warlord and that you will behave according to your nature. It is, after all, precisely your nature that interests them."
Alfarius nodded again.
"Then we have a first measure of understanding."
He raised his left gauntlet. There was a series of deep mechanical thumps, and light began to shaft into the chamber as the entire starboard wall began to retract into the roof. Sonica realized that a row of immense blast shutters was gradually opening to reveal a vast stellar observation port. The light, soft yellow but bright, like a summer's haze, poured under the opening shutters and slowly flooded the chamber. The briefing chamber was as large as he had expected, with a black grill floor, heavy bulkheads of bare metal, and a vaulted roof. Everything in it was bathed in the smoky, golden radiance that streamed in from outside. Along the inner wall, behind Alfarius's spare cyclopean throne,
35 fully plated Alpha Legion Astartes stood like monumental statues. They had been there all along, silent in the darkness. They were all captains or squad leaders. Sonica recognized Pech and Herzog by their company marks, Omegon in his almost black armor, and Ranko in the monstrous plate of the Terminators. They were illuminated in the golden light like some Elysian vision. Grammaticus had seen them too. Sonica saw the pang of undisguised fear in his eyes. Alpharius rose to his feet. The shutters ground to a halt, fully open. The view through the giant observation port was as impressive as the revealed post-human warriors. The vault of space, more profoundly deep than Sonica had ever seen it, was thick with distant stars that shone like motes of dust in sunlight. Radiant streamers of gas, as delicate and multicolored as moth wings, lay across the star field like veils, causing some stars to glitter like faceted jewels, and others to fog and blur like uncut stones. Nearby, perhaps only 150 million kilometers away, lay a pale red sun. The local star, and the source of the bathing yellow sunlight that made both the view and the chamber seem as if they were set in amber. Closer still, looming below them, was the night side of a planet. Alpharius pointed at the star. Hololithic graphics immediately lit up across the observation port, outlined the star, and contoured it. Numerical columns rapidly scrolled up the port, followed by block statistical data.
"Freeze there. Dim radiance and magnify by 6, said Alpharius.
The hololithic projection blinked and centered a glare-adjusted magnification of the star on the port display.
42 Hydra, said Alpharius. It's an old Population 2 star with poor metallicity. Its life is reaching an end. 42 Hydra, would you care to comment, John?
Grammaticus looked lost for words.
Lord, said Sonica.
Speak, Peto.
As I understand it, 42 Hydra was selected as a mark of homage to the Legion. An inside joke, if you will. I believe that, in hindsight, John possibly regrets the flippancy of the gesture.
Alpharius nodded.
That, Grammaticus said, coughing but recovering some composure, that is the case, Lord. No disrespect or mockery was intended. 42 Hydra was chosen because of your emblem.
Is this typical of the symbolism and nuance we can expect from the Cabal? Asked Peck.
No, said Grammaticus.
Good, said Omegon. Because it's childish. 42 Hydra has 6 planets, Alpharius continued. The third one, designated 42 Alpha Tertius, being the one you directed us to, John. We sit in orbit above it.
Above Aeolith, said Grammaticus.
Repeat.
Aeolith, said Grammaticus. The Cabal's name for this world. 42 Hydra Tertius is Aeolith.
So noted. Isolate and enlarge.
The graphics returned the star to its original position, and then surrounded the dark globe below them, sectioned it, and brought it up into the center of the port. More graphics spooled across the projection.
Small and unremarkable, said Alpharius. It is racked by pestilential weather and acid precipitation. Uninhabited, according to our vital sweeps, autopros detect only basic xenofauna.
He paused.
Distinguish, he ordered.
The display revealed the surface of the planet in terms of mottled topographic imaging, and then overlaid that with a graphic of striated weather patterns. The world looked like a grey-flecked iris.
A backwater, in other words, said Alpharius, and utterly hostile to human life. And yet, he paused again. Enlarge! The display rapidly magnified a small section of the world and outlined it. A circular whirl of white vapour, like an island in the streaked grey cloud mass. In the southern hemisphere, Alpharius continued, we read a zone 300 kilometres in diameter that possesses a rudimentary human-bearable atmosphere. What are the chances of that?
What, indeed, Grammaticus replied.
Would you care to explain? Asked Alpharius.
Grammaticus took another breath to steady himself and remain calm.
That is the venue. Elemental processes were activated there about 5 years ago to prepare the area for your visit. They've barely had time to manufacture a decent microclimate, but it's sustainable enough.
Atmospheric engineering? Asked Herzog.
Yes, sir, Grammaticus replied.
Magnify specific, Alpharius instructed.
The boxed image of the white vapour blinked half a dozen times as the scale enlarged, resolving details of cloud masses and then individual formations, until the view looked down through wisps of trailing white cloud at surface details. Sonica peered hard. He wasn't sure what he was supposed to be seeing. A range of hills, mountains, perhaps, cold and grey, seen from directly above, and deep pockets of valley shadow. In the middle of the frame, nestled amongst the higher peaks, lay some sort of indistinct pattern, the outline of some structure.
I find this particularly interesting, said Alpharius. This structure reminded me of something.
He looked back at the port and raised his hand.
Display and compare archive record N6371.
A second graphic box appeared beside the first, showing another orbital image, taken under different conditions. It was clearly another world. A network of graphic lines rapidly linked areas on both boxes until it was evident that hundreds of contextual similarities had been identified. The boxes then shuffled and overlaid. The surface structures matched with an unnerving precision.
Archive N6371, said Alpharius, is an orbital view of Monlo Harbour.
There was a long silence.
A structure of that type was the epicenter of an atmospheric deluge that almost annihilated us, said Alpharius, and you take us to its twin on a world where atmospheric manipulation is already underway.
I can see how that looks bad, Grammaticus admitted.
John,
Sonica hissed. Grammaticus glanced at Alpharius and bowed his head respectfully.
Forgive me, Lord.
He walked across to the port and stopped when he was close enough to point out individual details.
They are the same, because both worlds are halting sites, he said.
Define the term, demanded Peck.
Of course, said Grammaticus. The Cabal is extremely old and composed of various, what you would term, Xenos breeds. They have no shared origin or homeworld. Since the earliest days, the time of their formation, they have been nomadic, moving from one world to the next, like the court circuits of the old kings of Terra.
How long do they stay in one place? Asked Omegon.
However long they want, sir, Grammaticus replied. However long they need. Over the ages, they constructed halting sites on the many worlds that form their long orthotenic routes. Landing zones, you see. On some worlds, Nerth being a good example, local populations later inhabited the sites in ignorance of their original purpose.
That implies a significant span of time, said Peck.
Grammaticus nodded sadly.
I need you to appreciate the duration and extent of the Cabal's activities. The halting site at Mon Lo was constructed nearly 12,000 years ago. The one here, on Aeolith, is considerably older, about 90,000 years. It was the Cabal's previous visits to Nerth and their understanding of the culture developing there that caused them to select it as a place to demonstrate to you the...
Wait, said Alpharius. Did you just say 90,000 years?
Yes, Lord Primarch. Alpharius seemed to consider this for a moment.
Continue.
I've rather lost my thread, sir, said Grammaticus. There is little left that I can explain. The Cabal has prepared the venue, and you have come to meet with them. I suggest... He cleared his dry throat again. I suggest you get on with it. I'm your key, sir. You must take me to the surface and...
A moment, said Omegon.
He broke from the rank of watching Astartes and walked over to the observation port. For a moment, Sonica feared that the warrior was intent on doing some harm to Grammaticus, but instead he stared pensively down at the dark world below them. He uncoupled his helm and removed it.
"You've enticed us here, John Grammaticus," he said, "with vague stories of an impending cataclysm that threatens to engulf mankind and the cosmos, and the role we might take in preventing it. I would like to know a little more before this legion commits to even a landing."
Grammaticus laughed out loud. Omegon looked down at him sharply. "I'm sorry, Lord Omegon," Grammaticus said, failing to stifle his giggles, "but you have brought an entire militarized expedition fleet across Parsecs on the basis of my vague stories. As I see it, you've committed fairly comprehensively already. Stop prevaricating!" Omegon glared down at the human.
"First Captain Pech said you described the impending cataclysm as a war against chaos."
"I did, sir," said Grammaticus, "though the war against chaos has been raging since the galaxy's infancy. However, the human species has now become the focus of the war, and the Imperium its chosen battlefield. The Cabal has far seen that what happens in the next few years will be pivotal to the destiny of all races." Omegon turned and looked back at the planet.
"Pech related something else, you said, back in heathen Mon Lo. He said you called what was coming a great war against yourselves. That would seem to describe a civil war, John Grammaticus."
"Yes, it would," said Grammaticus, still staring up at the giant.
"Civil war in the Imperium is an impossibility," said Alpharius, walking forwards to join them. "It simply could not happen. The Emperor's plan is..."
"Utopian," Grammaticus cut in and finished boldly, "and therefore predicated to fall short of its goals. Please, the Alpha Legion is the most pragmatic and subtle of all the legions. You are not blinded by imperial dogma like the others. You are not hidebound by Gilliman's ideals of conduct or rooted in frenzied tribal tradition like Russ's warriors, nor are you stalwart lapdogs like Dawn's famous men or berserk automatons like Angron's monsters. You... think for yourselves."
"That is the closest thing to heresy that has ever been spoken in my presence," said Alpharius quietly.
"And that's why you're listening to me," said Grammaticus with a grin. "You recognize the truth when you hear it. You only recruit the cleverest and brightest. You think for yourselves." He stood between the giants, rising to his scheme. Sonica smiled as he saw John Grammaticus's confidence return. "The Emperor chases a utopian ideal," Grammaticus announced, "which is fine as far as it goes. It ignites and drives the masses. It gives a soldier something to focus on. But perfection is only ever an ideal."
"We have considered these issues," said Pech quietly.
"And?" asked Grammaticus.
"We have come to appreciate that utopian goals are ultimately counterintuitive to species survival,"
Pech replied.
No power can engender or force to be engendered a state of perfection, said another captain, because perfection is an absolute that cannot be attained by an imperfect species. It is better to manage and maintain the flaws of man on an ongoing basis, said Pech.
Grammaticus bowed. Thank you for that appraisal. I applaud you for your insight. He looked up at Altharius.
Sir, the Imperium is about to implode. At the halting site on Aeolith, the Cabal awaits to show you how best, as the first captain so eloquently put it, to manage and maintain the flaws of man.
Altharius let out a deep sigh. He gazed down at Grammaticus.
I wonder, years from now, will I regret not executing you at this moment?
Civil war, sir, Grammaticus cautioned. Think of it.
Altharius shook his head.
I am. John, my brother Primarchs have their feuds and rivalries. They bicker at times and fall out with one another, the way any close kinsman might. I've come to that family only lately, and already I know the fashion of it. Rabute, for example, despises me, and I ignore him. It may lead to bruises at some stage, but not blood. For a civil war to ignite, Primarch would have to be drawn against Primarch in blood. That would never happen, John. It is simply inconceivable. Now that the War Master leads us, we...
War Master? Asked Grammaticus sharply.
Horus Lupercal is War Master, Altharius replied.
Since when? Grammaticus asked. There was a queasy look on his face suddenly.
4 months ago, after the great triumph on Ulanor, the Emperor retired from the Crusade and named his first son as War Master. I regret I could not attend the ceremony, but the retreat from Nerth and the business you presented to me was occupying my time. To be fair, I shun such occasions. I sent envoys.
Horus is already War Master? Grammaticus whispered. He sat down heavily on the deck and bowed his face. The massive Astartes looked down at him, as if he was a child throwing a tantrum.
"What's the matter, John?" asked Omegon.
"Already?" Grammaticus murmured, shaking his head. "So soon?" 2 years, he said. 2 years. We haven't got 2 years."
"John?"
Grammaticus refused to look up at the Astartes around him. Sonica stepped forwards and scooped him back onto his feet. Grammaticus was trembling. Wiping his mouth, Grammaticus looked up at Altharius.
Horus is the catalyst. Please, Lord, escort me to the venue. Take whatever retinue you choose. I will be your shibboleth. I will conduct you to the presence of the Cabal as intermediary and vouch for you. This is the way it has to be done. There is no more time. Horus is War Master. Oh, glory, Horus is War Master.
Peto, conduct John back to his cell, Pech said.
Holding Grammaticus upright, Sonica replied with a firm nod. Grammaticus began to struggle.
I have to go down first. I have to open the way, he cried.
Sonica placed him in a tight arm lock and led him towards the hatch.
We will commit a landing party to the venue zone as soon as the fleet has arrived to support us, Altharius said.
You're wasting time, Grammaticus yelled, fighting with Sonica. You're wasting valuable time!
Remove him, said Altharius.
Sonica palmed the lock of the cell open and threw Grammaticus inside.
I don't appreciate the bruises, John, he said, rubbing his arms.
You don't appreciate anything, Pedo, Grammaticus growled, getting to his feet. Horus
is War Master. Do you know what that means?
Sonica shrugged.
It means that our timing is out. It means the war has already begun for all intents and purposes. Peto, you've got to help me. I need to get down there, down to the surface. I need to pave the way. The Alpha Legion mustn't be allowed to go blundering in. It'll ruin everything. The Cabal will not respond to military intimidation. Please, Peto.
I can't help you, John.
Please, Peto.
Sonica recoiled as if he had been stung.
Ah, oh, don't do that again.
Sorry, Grammaticus murmured. I'm sorry, Peto. Look, you have to help me get down to the surface.
The Primarch has ordered otherwise. I can't do that.
Peto, I can't. For Terra's sake, Grammaticus said, sitting down on his cot.
The Alpha Legion has to be recruited before it's too late, and I have to open the way.
I have no leverage, Sonica said.
You hate it here.
Sonica nodded.
Yes, I fucking do. I've never been so lonely in my life. I trust the Alpha Legion less and less, and I positively despise my fellow operatives. I don't understand what I've become caught up in, but I loathe it day after day.
So, help me.
How?
You're in a position of trust. They trust you.
Sonica shook his head.
I can't. I'm sorry, John, I just can't.
Peto!
Grammaticus yelled. Peto waved his new hand, and the hatch slammed shut, cutting Grammaticus off. Sonica walked back down the grim iron corridors of the detention block. At the far end of the hallway, where he could no longer hear Grammaticus's angry shouts and pounding fists, he leant against the wall and slid down into a crouch.
Peto!
He hadn't heard the cage door slide open. He sprang up, rubbing his eyes.
"Was he difficult?" asked Pech. "Did he try his tricks on you?"
Sonica nodded.
"Yes, sir." "Are you all right?" Pech asked. "Are you still up to the job? I can assign another operative to Grammaticus if you prefer."
"No, sir," Peto Sonica replied. "I can do this. You've given me a duty to perform, and I'll see it through to the end."
Ingo Pech nodded.
"Do it," he said.